Welcome back, everyone, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. But we have somebody here today. Her name is Tia Bell. Hi, Tia. Tia's drinking.
Good morning. How are you, Tia?
Very good, very good. Time for the morning coffee. So yeah. Tia is interesting because Tia is going to speak about crimes of passion. And crimes of passion happen not only in marriage, but absolutely in divorce. And in our ongoing attempts to help people get to a point of amicability, if not just clarity in making decisions going forward in the best way possible, I thought this was a really important topic. Now, Tia, your background is unbelievable because you have been for many years a detective. You're in New Jersey, and now you're
That's
a psychic.
Correct.
Yep. And you've always been in New Jersey, right? Northeast?
I have. Yes, I have.
Love that. So, Tia, when we were talking and going through what we're going to introduce the audience to, you said at the end, you said, I really feel that spite is one of the biggest emotions underpinning crimes of passion. And so would you explain that to the audience, please?
I think a lot of times when I've been dealing with either people coming in the shop and working with them during readings. And I read a lot of men. It's not just women that I read. It's something that, it's a privacy. It's a lot of gateways for them to be able to find the ending clear, concise, without having, I hate drama. Nobody wants drama. Somewhere in a divorce, though, everyone has it. So everybody has drama. Would you agree to that?
Absolutely.
You know, and the emotional part of it, which I think is what you nailed during saying the emotional part of it, is what I find is in the beginning, everyone is fake. Yeah, no, we're going to do this. Everything's going to be great. The kids are never going to suffer. And we're all conveniently trying to find that rationale. And I find there's one person that is not truthful about that. In the interim, as time goes by and they see that either the person has vacated by emotion or via just completely left and went with someone else. There we have that old-fashioned spite factor. And I'm going to get you. And I'm going to get you. And there the claws come out. And that saying, I think, is very truthful, that the claws come out. And once that starts to hit in a divorce, I think that makes your job so much harder.
Well, you know, that's so interesting because I get a lot of calls from people who say, yes, this is an amicable divorce, and therefore they don't want to go through attorneys and they don't want to file hearings. A lot of times I think it's wishful thinking that they would like to be there, but they're really not being as honest with themselves as possible. And then I think it's money. I cost a lot less because I'm not an attorney than attorneys do. But if you don't get the right people in your corner to really look at and ask you questions that sometimes only an attorney can ask, you might not be choosing the right path to get divorced. And then all these emotions, like you just said, start occurring, and holy heck, now it's ending up in physical harm.
Well, you know, I lived with an attorney for 10 years of my life. So I learned so much at that point in time. And one of the things that I can honestly say, and I lived with him through his divorce, which was, could have been put into law books. He was with someone that was that became mentally unstable out of greed. And that word greed, I think, placates, what would you say, 3/4 of how many people that get divorced?
Well, it's very interesting what people prioritize when we get to the settlement agreement. And so, yes, you had greed is interesting because in our pre-interview, you talked about overreaching, and now you mentioned it again. And I'll sit in a mediation and say, you are lighting a match to your settlement. you are stepping way too far over the line for what would be appropriate payback, so to speak, for the emotion that you suffered. So yes, greed.
You know, if they were able to separate and divide and be able to come to you as if they were dissolving a corporation, things would never get to the point that they do. But we've got the spite, we've got the emotion, we've got the greed, and I want to hurt you. I want to hurt you. So since I can't hurt you no longer in the heart, now I'm going to hurt you in the pocketbook. And once we start going down that path, it's dark.
God tease.
And I think it's unfair, wouldn't you say? I think it's unfair and it's very sad.
I mean, you totally hit the nail on the head. So the reason for the divorce becomes the backdrop to the settlement. And when you're in a state like California, which is a no-fault divorce state, it doesn't matter about the adultery. Domestic violence is the only thing that comes into play and may have a financial impact on the settlement. But other than domestic violence, severe domestic violence, the payback for the emotional hurt people feel in a marriage and therefore in a divorce, yes, they try and equate in money and it doesn't always work.
The spite factor too in my job of dealing as a police officer was that I felt that a lot of people love the word restraining order. They don't even know what constitutes a restraining order. They have no idea what entails down the road. A lot of people don't even realize that a restraining order is not just that person contacting you, but you cannot contact them. So they get, what do you mean? What do you mean? Well, I have to get in touch with him because of the children. No, no. See, what you just did was you severed and divided any communication possible. It's not a one-sided street that once you obtain that restraining order that he can no longer or she can no longer contact you. It is both parties, and you are just as liable in law that you could also be arrested. And people do not understand that. And I find that they use a lot in divorce people of law enforcement that they want to get in the middle to fight their battles for them. So they're in a losing situation. And believe me, there's some people that, you know what, a restraining order, God bless, you really do need it. You need to save yourself. You need to save your kids. Someone is unbalanced. We're not talking about that. I'm talking first about the people who are using the system to placate as far as their spite is concerned. And believe me, it's often.
No, you're so right. This is very interesting. You're so right that people, because of emotional hurt and pain, will, I guess, blow up a point or make a bigger deal out of something, get a child DFS, child protection services involved when there's absolutely no reason to. And they just exacerbate an already difficult situation. Yes, law enforcement is called in sometimes unnecessarily.
And, you know, you kind of do, you can get your radar on that when you're in the midst of people that you can see if it's someone that's doing it from a spite. You can see someone that's doing it because they truly are fearful. I've seen it backfire on some of my clients that really, really indeed needed to have that, was begging for the courts to come and guide them and stand by them. You know, a lot of problems that happen, and I'm sure you know this, people lie. People just lie. They will lie about situations. They will make things up. They will not tell the truth. And it's very hard sometimes for us to come in. And the law states that if they come in, we do indeed have to write that up because of crimes of passion. Because if you come in and state to us, I'm fearing for my life, my husband has lost his mind, my wife has lost her mind, and we do not grant that, if God forbid something happens, there's a liability. So it does. Now, when it goes into the court system and they actually go before the judge, then the judge grants whether or not it will sustain. But a lot of people using it as a weapon is a problem for the people that really need to be protected.
Okay, so for the people who may use it as a weapon, Tia, because they're just so overwrought, what is your message to them?
What you're playing with people's lives. You're playing with people's livelihoods. I'll give you a for instance. If a restraining order is taken out upon a police officer during a dirty divorce, I have seen this more times I could even count for you. More times than I could count for you. We have to relinquish not only all of our weapons if we are a collector, but the weapon in which we have every day to protect ourselves and others. So that means right then and there, whatever positioning we're doing has now changed a course. And I have seen it done a lot in my day by people that just wanted to cause problems for that officer. So that's just one particular scenario.
Okay, let's go to something else you said. So one spouse legitimately sees and feels that their life may be threatened by either an unhinged spouse, you know, mental health issues going on, and wants law enforcement to step in ahead of time. And quite often law enforcement will say, well, we need more. We can't just come in and prevent a crime. How do we know that you're telling us the truth? So how can somebody in that position prepare information to prevent a crime?
I think anyone that's working with the police, we understand when people are heightened in emotion. We understand when you're frightened. We understand. But when you're unhinged, and you behave that way, you're not going to get the successful results that you're looking for from law enforcement. So try to maintain and try to be stable so that you can be clear and concise about what your threat is. If you have a verbal threat, make sure that you have a way of using that as evidence. Use cameras in your house. Anything that you can obtain during the time that someone is threatening you. And I mean this in any aspect, not just marital. This happens in other areas. And I'm going to say this. Make sure that you try to find evidence of a way. Record it. Use the cameras in your house. Have your Ring doorbell. Any time that you could present that to law enforcement is going to be night and day.
Okay, so let's just say somebody does amass a lot of evidence like you just suggested, and maybe, Tia, even a paper trail of texts and emails or written letters. Can they assemble this and say, look, I'm absolutely frightened to death that my life may be in danger. Can you present that to the police, and can the police act on it?
Absolutely. And then, you know, they do take a violation of a restraining order very seriously. So it's, I mean, especially even now, we've all been living in the COVID nightmare. But if you violate a restraining order, that I can assure you is taken very seriously by the courts. That person will be locked up.
Okay. All right. Good.
So, but you want to remain clear. We've went to the irate, screaming individual and, you know, losing their minds and, you know, and retaliating. I promise you, there's no good to come of you retaliating. There just isn't. Trying to go back at someone and hitting them or, you know, presenting that type of behavior is never going to get you where you need to be with law enforcement. It's just not. Let us do that job for you. Because you're only escalating a problematic situation. You're not dealing with someone. If we're already being called there, one of the two parties is not clear and responsible for their actions.
Okay, so are you suggesting that if the portended victim amasses evidence substantially that their life may be in danger, is it a restraining order then that's the next step that the police would come in and...
Correct.
Okay, all right, I wanted to understand.
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Okay. And restraining orders are not just during, please let's clear that up, is not just to give in during a period of time of you know, divorce. I mean, you could actually have a neighbor that you find threatening. You know, that I just had a situation, which was, I'm a huge animal lover and complete crazy person for animals. And I had someone that was a friend of mine that was living probably about 25 minutes away from me in my jurisdiction. And the neighbor was, for some reason, a hate towards his dog. And this dog would go out, it was a little bit of country life. And this man shot his dog.
Oh, God.
Turned around and said that he thought it was a bear. This man's been living there for years. He knew it wasn't a bear. He knew it was this dog. This was a very twisted individual. He had a history of some sort of, you know, animal problems. And he got a restraining order. So restraining orders are really for people who fear that they are fearful of another individual and their harm.
Okay. Tia, can crimes of passion be prevented?
I think crimes of passion can be prevented. I think that it comes with the individual who at that point of time would be the victim. And I think I would love to do another podcast just strictly upon victims, what we've learned over the years, how we are treated to know whether, you know, what a victim and how their behavior is. A lot of times with victims that I see in domestic violence is that they get the brainwashing that, well, he loves me. He's acting out like this because he loves me. He's acting out like this because he can't live without me. He's behaving like this because, and they will bring this realm of craziness in their head that they almost feel bad for the person that is doing this to them. And you're playing with fire at that point in time. Anyone that exhibits any sort of pain, threat should be under the control of the police or notified to the police. This is a threatening individual. You don't play with fire.
What you brought up happens so often. I mean, we see it in movies and TV shows even, but yes, it happens in real life. I mean, just to get the victim to be able to change their understanding and perspective on the reason why violence is being perpetrated on them. That's a whole issue unto itself. But for those listening who have allowed violence to get out of control in their relationships, yes, let's send a clear message that how should they really look at this?
You know, they need to get some sort of mental help, even if you're going to a relative first or a close confidant as a friend, but you need to get some sort of person that is going to stand away from this, that is not involved. They don't have a blurred vision, and allow them to try and direct you a little bit, because what I've noticed a lot too, you know, I think that 80% of what we would characteristically call domestic violence is done by mental people screwing with someone's mind. I'm going to get you. The man never lays a hand, or the woman never lays a hand on you. I will take your children from you. You will be in a box on the street. If I had a dollar for every time I heard that you'll have a box on the street. You know, that type of mental cruelty can wear on someone just as bad as a fist.
It's true. So true.
And there needs to be taken some sort of action. If you feel like you are partaking in this and this person is doing this and you're being browbeated, so to speak, then I tell you, find a therapist, find someone that you can go to, because you need to be able to stand up to this individual. Being broken emotionally during a divorce is 100% a tactic that is done, and people need to be made aware of it.
Can we add on to that, for the victim to break their cycle, this phrase, don't normalize abnormal behavior.
100%.
Yeah. And don't you think that's what we do in so many areas of our life? And I think we're seeing it come into play now. We had so much violence this week. we cannot normalize abnormal behavior. And abnormal behavior is anything that isn't pleasant and kind and rational and able to have a conversation about. Right? I mean,
I've a lot of women that I'm very strong as far as women are concerned. I'm a girl's girl. I will stand behind you. I will back you up 100%. I have worked with the courts with my clients. I have taught them how to let the system help them and benefit their children. I've worked with DIFAS. I have done a lot of policing after I have actually left the force because people really do not know law. And it's there to help you. The abuse of law is what has caused a lot of people in my department to not have empathy all the time that they should towards people that come in because there has been so much abuse of law. Sorry about that. Not quite sure where that came from, but the guard dogs are up and running.
That's okay. A little dog barking background noise isn't the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, sorry guys, but those are pit bulls over here in Jersey. And and I'm a big fan of people, by the way, making sure that you do some protection within your home. I'm a big fan of making sure that you have animals that you love dearly that do protect you. I do believe that you should have your alarm system set up. I do believe you should have your cameras, your Ring. Anyone that is dealing with some sort of domestic violence, I plead with you and plead with you. Make sure you are protecting yourself. I don't care if you're in an apartment. Put nanny cams in. Do whatever you need to do to make sure that if this beast is coming around you, you have now filmed him or her. Women are just as bad with domestic violence. People do not realize that. People always think it's the male. It's not always the male. I've seen women and men, some men were raised, I don't hit a woman, I don't hit a woman. And then what happens? The woman goes crazy, beats the man, and the man still holds true to that.
Okay, so you opened up a great door. Let's segue into what causes violence in a marriage versus what causes violence in a divorce? Two separate issues. And how does a woman express herself versus a man, or is it very similar?
I think there's you reached a really good point. I think the brink of a divorce, sometimes people just cannot tolerate or stand what's going on and they snap. And that word snap is very true. When it's something that's a domestic violence that's done in a marriage, that person has had it in them for a very long time. You did not bring that out. Don't let them give you the excuse that they did. And I guarantee you, if you were to look into deeply from past relationships, it was exhibited at that time also.
Okay. You said when we were talking previously, you said that in a marriage, when I said what causes violence in a marriage, you said people lose sight of their futures. I love that statement. Can you explain more what you meant by that?
I've had people that have said, you know, I'm going to take him for every dollar that he has. He's with another woman. She'll never live like me. She wants to live my lifestyle. And I just look at them and I say, you know, greed is one of the seven deadly sins and you're just embarking upon it now. There's no reason if you had a wonderful life that you have to take his life away, that he has to live literally with his mother on a couch because he's so indebted to all the bills of the house, paying everything for your children, paying for college, you don't have a job. There's no reason for that. I think amicable breeds down the path that we both work towards the great ending of this union that we had. It doesn't say I have to rape you of your entire future. And that is where I think that is very problematic. I try to talk to people about that. And I try to empower women to tell them how wonderful their life would be moving forward if they didn't do that. That's never going to leave you. Once you entertain that inside of your soul, that is never going to leave you. You have hate inside of you.
I'm speechless. That Yes, that was so philosophical. And I think I agree with that. I can see that. Okay, in a marriage, you have a dynamic between, whether it's heterosexual or gay or lesbian, you have a dynamic, communication and behavioral dynamic between both spouses. How does each spouse tend to push the envelope and push the buttons of the other spouse and then open the door to some level of violence?
I think when the buttons get pushed, you know, we're watching a lot of mental illness that probably was underlying and now come to a head during COVID. Now, I have a lot of friends that are therapists, psychiatrists, et cetera. And I've been watching, it's very heightened, as we've all been seeing with the burning of cities, and we've all been seeing with people that are breaking into the Capitol. And there's a heightened level. And COVID has caused this, because it's not in the human nature for people to be locked down. Using that and seeing that, when we're going to use the terminology of buttons being pushed, is what I see when people get married and things go awry by one person or another. Sometimes things just end, people. They just end. They have to go in deep that I'm hurt, so now I'm going to hurt you. And at that point is where I think we take things to a storm. And that's where it could bring things out from people that, unfortunately, could be hurtful. Physically, mentally, financially.
Yeah. It's all hurt. It's all harm. For me, I look at how people behave when they come to me when we have meetings to file, and how they behave in the mediation. And I do think they behave in the mediation the same way they behaved in their marriage. And I see two prominent things overall, maybe not with every single couple, but overall. Women tend to not show as much appreciation to men as they could. And men seem to disrespect women after a while and push them away. What do you think? Do you think I'm observing things incorrectly? Have you seen kind of stereotypical behavior in a heterosexual relationship like that?
I think in my era, I'm in my 50s. So I think in my generation, what I'm seeing, and I like to see the people that are in their early 40s, in their 30s, that are not living like this. I tell women all the time, you know what? Let's not do the Mother Mary thing that you stayed home and you raised the kids and you had the perfect house, because we all know that when y'all went to dinner, you had nothing to talk about. Because when a guy's working in the crazy world of business, he doesn't want to sit and hear how many times your two-year-old threw up today. And that's where women screw up brutally. Get someone, get figured out, get childcare, and make your mind work. Be a smart woman, be an individual. Do not succumb to jelly mind. Because that's when I have a tough time with those women. I don't have a great time with that. And that whole, I appreciate the hardest women in the world are homemakers. No, you're not. No, you're not. Sorry. No, you're not. Go out and take the abuse in the workforce and see on a daily basis how you have to learn to curtail your temper, how you have to learn to eat crow, how you have to be able to juggle six things. That's where, and I like to see parenting done where the male is involved. So you're both working. There's two people parenting. Those are the marriages that are working better than the Leave It to Beavers that we grew up with.
Wow, that was loaded with so many things. So A, let's start with the Leave It to Beaver decade. That was the 50s and 60s. So I grew up in the 50s and 60s. And what I noticed when it got to the 60s, and I was more aware of what was going on in people's homes, there were moms didn't work by and large. It was the Leave It to Beaver dynamic. And I saw Valium being taken by a lot of moms. I saw a lot of alcoholic moms. I saw a lot of moms with issues. And I was surprised. I couldn't understand it because isn't this idyllic? Aren't moms really supposed to stay home and take care of the kids? And so why are moms having all these problems in their daily life and turning to substance abuse? That's very interesting.
Because that was also the era where you weren't supposed to talk about when the man smacked you a few times after dinner. Well, and nobody discussed about the alcoholism, and nobody discussed about the pedophiles. I mean, if we look at how loaded that era was, just in pedophilia alone, I mean, this is all standing where we've risen above that.
I never even thought about that. Gosh. Okay, so you're right about that. Now we fast forward to Gloria Steinem, the women's movement. Women started using their college degrees before they raised a family. And now we have, I will use my favorite person as an example, Ramona Singer on the New York Housewives on Bravo, who has always said in every one of the years she's been on, women, make your own money. Because if you don't make your own money and you're beholden to your other spouse, whether it's a man or another woman, you will never fully have independence.
You will never. And not only that, but I see the women. I left my divorce. I was 27 years old. I got divorced from my husband. And it was a family-owned business. And it was going to be, you know what, let's screw her over. And I said, you know what, I'm not going to go through this. I'm young, I'm smart, and I'm not going to put myself through this. So I turned around and I said, okay, fine. But we're parenting 50-50. None of this Wednesday, Saturday dinner bullshit. Can I say that?
I think that's okay.
So I really stuck strong with it. Because if you want to play games, I'm going to play them back with you. And you're going to learn, we're going to do 50-50 here. And that's where I went. And this man did not want me to succeed in my life. We still happen to be good friends, by the way. But everything that I did as an achiever moving forward in my life, I made sure he knew about it. Because I wasn't going to fall down, and you aren't going to take me down, and it wasn't going to happen. But that's where I tell women all the time, I walked away with nothing. I created my own life. I'm a big fan. Everyone that's listening, your daughters, please get a prenup. Please get a prenup. Even if you don't think you own anything, get a prenup. It's a contract.
And what will that do in your opinion, Tia?
You know, I think the people that I see that have prenups are less likely during the time of divorce and they need to go see you as a mediator. Know their limitations. They're already presented to them and it's already there. And now there's not blood. We don't go after blood because you can't.
Oh my gosh. What a brilliant idea. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, as I'm thinking out loud with you right now, so the parameters of the settlement are already defined. Therefore, a lot of emotion that could happen is mitigated in advance. Is that what you're saying?
Completely. By the time they get into you, they're like, look, we set this up just in case and we're here. We need you to help us where we're going with this. And usually people that have that mindset on a prenup, are much more reasonable for you to deal with.
I think so.
So I tell all of my young people that are getting married, I just had a contractor come in last Saturday, beautiful young fella, about 32 years old. And I said to him, you need a prenup. He's like, Tia, but I don't have anything. I go, you're 32 years old, dollface. Whatever you have with your wife, you put it and you say where you want it to go. God forbid in 15, 20 years, it happens. People don't fall in love and they stay in love. Sometimes it happens. You now can go to a mediation with a contract.
Right, because divorce is the breaking of a contract. And people don't realize that. When you go to City Hall to get a marriage license, isn't that interesting? We get married because we're in love, and we get married for emotional reasons, yet we're not considered married unless we go to City Hall. City Hall is a government building. Why do we go to a government building? Because the country, every single state, considers marriage a financial relationship. And when you go to get divorced, you are breaking your financial relationship. I only learned that when I got into the family law business.
And you're keeping yourself wide open.
So
keeping yourself wide open.
Right. And when people come to me to put together a prenup, I can't, as a non-attorney, file a prenup. So what I can do is mediate the terms of the prenup and then send them to two individual attorneys to write it up the way it needs to be written up to stand up in court. And so what I like to do with people in the mediation is, okay, you're deciding on what you know now. You're deciding on how you want to have assigned real estate, pensions, you want to talk about spousal support, alimony. Okay, that's all good and fine, but let's fast forward. Let's think about the future. Let's think about what you are going to create as community property and community debt. And that really opens it up to the future. So we really try and accomplish as much as possible. And then if they have to get divorced, it really is all laid out.
I think the problem with a lot of what you deal with too, and we're bringing the spite factor back in, the one thing that makes me really, really sad is when people use their children as pawns. And during the course of divorce, I see it more than I'd like to see. I've had every situation possible known to mankind during a divorce. I have had children that have been potentially stolen, taken to other countries. I've had children that were molested by their own parent. I've had every God-given known scenario you've ever seen. And I've also, as a crime scene detective, have walked in on, unfortunately, death. So I've seen crimes of passion play out to the end, the bitter end, where lives are completely shattered now. They're shattered because there's death involved. And people just do not realize how fragile the human mind is.
Okay. Amazing, impactful statement. How fragile the human mind is. Let me go back to child abduction under this umbrella. So where does child abduction come into play with crimes of passion? What is the reason for child abduction by and large?
There's a couple different scenarios that go on that have played truthful in especially in New Jersey, right where I am. There's been a couple of, through the divorce and the parent being taken away from the children. And now we're going into this, you know, I see you on Monday and mom's screaming, you're no good. And he's a horrible human being and your father doesn't love you. And now we've got the children absorbing all of this horrible mental health that is given to them by one of the parents. And the children, what they are, children, they will always tell. The beauty of a child is to speak the truth. Mommy says you're this, mommy says you're that. Vice versa, it goes on both ways. That person begins to snap. We've had two children shot in the back seat of a car, and then the man killed himself. Last year, we had a child that was thrown, believe it or not, two children thrown off of a bridge. And by the grace be to God, they survived. Wow. I've had people think it's wonderful. They're watching this 90-day fiancé. It's all fun and games. They come from another country. They take it very seriously that now they've had a son here, because we all know that scenario. I've had women that have had to go in hiding because that individual that was here only made American citizen because of the marriage is now going to steal that child to get them back to their homeland to be raised by their mother. People do not think this should, it really, really does exist. And I stress upon it to you. Use your head when you're getting involved in relationships, because sometimes the outcome is because of your ignorance. And I don't mean to be mean about that.
Retaliatory. since we're talking about spite, child abduction, is it retaliatory in some cases?
I think it's retaliatory when it comes to the mind snapping and they go into the realm of killing, because if I can't have you, then I need you with me. And that's the part of the mind that snaps. I think the other is not retaliatory. I think the other is ownership. You're my loins.
I was just going to ask you that, because when we were talking earlier, you did say one of the causes of violence in divorce is that one spouse feels ownership over the other spouse. And if they can't continue to have that spouse and maintain some control, they snap and go to violence.
You know, I always say, and I make it funny, so whoever's listening to this, you either like my opinion or you don't. That's why I live in the United States. But I always tease whoever I'm dating that I didn't come with two cows and a chicken. So I wasn't sold to a man. And I've had women that I've arrested, okay, that I've sat with and talked to because they were drug mules. And one in particular that I really got to love and used to check on her when I in my jail, she had come as a drug mule from Colombia. And she was sold by her mother to her father's friend when she was 14 years old. So I tell people in this country, you're very fortunate. Respect it. So that's my thing that I say to men, you know, because I'm a very independent, up in your face kind of gal, very strong. And I see that a lot of times during the course of divorce, when a man marries a woman and she's about 20 years old and they're married for 20 to 25 years and then the marriage falls apart or for whatever reasons, there's an ownership as if that's a parental thing towards the wife. I own you. You're mine. And that is very problematic during the course of the time that they are going through the divorce proceedings. Very dangerous, as a matter of fact. And there's your OJ and Nicole scenario.
Oh my God, I was going to ask you about this. I had it in my notes next. So let's use this as an example. Talk about it, because I lived here. I was here during that whole trial.
When you go to crime scene school, that's one of the cases that's studied very, very closely and in depth. Because of the mess that it was. I know everything about that case, front and back, everything. But the premise to that murder was jealousy. The premise was ownership. The premise was that's mine. And it became the point of her. He could sleep with as many women as he wanted to. But when it came to her becoming changing her life and being liberated sexually was where he became literally demonic and couldn't stand the thought of her with another man, so chose to kill her.
And when that was unfolding, when the trial was unfolding, my sister actually was the victim of domestic violence. Her husband accused her of looking at other men, and they were at a party, and he choked her and she almost blacked out. So that was the beginning of getting him out of the house, and that went into the divorce. But I remember we talked before she formally started that process of restraining order, get him out of the house, let's file for divorce. I said, look, if there's one thing I've learned from the O.J. Simpson trial with Nicole, she didn't take seriously enough the domestic violence. She didn't follow through on the restraining orders. And then it became too late. She was dead.
It was, and the way that she, I mean, obviously I studied that intense, the way that she was killed was just brutal. Her and Ron Goldman. That was absolutely horrific, a horrific crime scene. But as far as she is concerned, she had the tapes. She had the tapes of him screaming. She had the photos that were put in a safety deposit box. People knew around her. I think that was a scenario of a woman that was so afraid of what? He wouldn't give me the money. If he was locked up, how am I going to get the money?
Oh my God, T, I didn't even think about that.
So she shut her mouth, and I'm sure he said to her, get me locked up because where are you going to get money from? So let's go, ladies. This is another point of independence. So because of the fact that she was a stay-home mom, she was 20 years old, she wasn't educated, and she didn't have a career, she relied solely upon him for the money. So any interaction that would have been done legally where he would have been locked up, she would have not have been able to get whatever monies she needed to live. So it cost her her life.
OMG. It really goes back to the money. It really goes back to having an independent life so that you can freely and equally have a partnership with somebody. And if things go awry, you can make decisions in your own best interest, not for the money.
Wow. And to be able to give your freedom that if that person does indeed do anything to, you know, alert you about the fact that there could be bodily harm, you have an independence at that juncture for you to be able to say, I don't need your money. I'm good. But you just stay away from me. Or I can pick up and I can move. Or I can bring my children to Kansas. But those are the things that women need as independence. And I will go across this country and I will speak to women and I will educate them. I have to tell you, last summer before COVID, I like to go on the beach by myself. So I go on the beach and I have a book and there's a circle of women behind me. And it was a group of older women and their children, their female daughters. And I would say there was probably around 10 people sitting there. So I'm reading my book and I hear this woman say, now, I'm the wrong girl to say this in front of. I hear her turn around and say to her daughter, knock it off with your career. You need to focus on getting a man with money and you need to focus on just having kids and being a housewife. I'm not lying. I stood up. And I looked at the woman and I said, you should be ashamed of yourself. And that is a true story.
Unbelievable. That in this day and age, that's still unbelievable, but I guess I do believe it. Let's go to another case that happened, I think, in your backyard, Lorena Bobbitt.
Oh, yeah. Poor Lorena. Lorena, you know, people make such a joke about it, but it was really heartfelt. Lorena Bobbitt was pushed to that fractal part of the brain that just snapped. The abuse, he wanted her to have sex with his friend. He treated her like she was a paid hooker and that he was supposed to do what he wanted when he wanted. And the poor kid snapped. She snapped.
I don't know if this is an inappropriate time to ask this question, Tia, but how did she actually do it? I mean,
she's got a kitchen knife.
It was just one chop?
I must have been a great knife. I'd like to buy those knives, by the way. But yeah, she went in the kitchen, grabbed a knife, and just slung it right off.
Okay, so for anybody listening, and if you don't know about the Lorena Bobbitt case, because it was a little while ago, she snapped out. She was married. John Bobbitt, right?
Yeah.
And she cut his penis off while he was sleeping. And it got rehooked. It got sewed back.
It did. And then he did porn.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
And then he did porn. Yeah, let's make out on this situation that you were such a pig abuser. You know, listen, as I said before, I'm not sounding like I'm just being some sort of a chauvinist here. Abuse comes in many forms and many sexes. And I'm not stipulating that just on men because I've seen women do some really wicked stuff.
Right.
I've seen women during divorce break car windows, call up and make false charges with the police. I have seen women do the most spiteful things on planet Earth. So let's not spin this, and nor we are both, her and I are both standing strong on this. It's both parties, and we've both seen it.
Right. And just to give equal measure to both parties, it's not just women that need to be financially independent. I deal with a lot of couples where the man has a very difficult time keeping a job, earning a decent living, and then, you know, you get divorced, there's child support. Well, how am I supposed to pay for anything? I don't really work. So this is for women too. I mean, when you're getting in a relationship with somebody, with make sure they're able to function financially as well.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's probably, you know, I do emphasize that to my people that come in now that are young and they're on that 30-year-old, you know, wanting to get married and families. If you have a male that wants to stay home, okay, no. Get a set of balls, go to work. Everybody go to work because you need to be a good parent. Okay, you need to direct your children. You need to educate your children. You need your children to be strong. You do not raise your children like this woman on the beach. You just do not do that. If this poor girl grabs a guy that she has children with and has never set up anything for her individual life as far as work is concerned, she just set her daughter up for a life of misery. And that's vice versa.
Yeah. Okay, Tia, in our last 10 minutes, let's talk about you as a psychic. Because, of course, I love that. Who doesn't love a great psychic? When you are meeting with people and they're asking questions, relationship-oriented questions, how are you able to service people that maybe don't know a divorce is coming up, or they're ready to have a divorce, or they're ready to engage in a relationship and they don't know whether it's the right one? Talk a little bit about how you as a psychic are able to guide people and certainly bring in your law enforcement background when needed.
It's, you know, this was never a period in my life that I wanted to do this. It was something that was just for the people that I knew. I didn't want to be out here doing this. I wanted to stay doing my detective work. I loved it. I became very, very ill. And that was when I decided that I was going to do God's work. And for me, it's really, really, I hate to say it, but it's extremely easy for me that when I'm doing a reading to zone in on that person and find out about their life. And I have people come in and they look at me and they're shocked because I'll be like, okay, this is happening. Whether it be infidelity or I see pretty much everything that goes on in someone's life. Being with a psychic is not for me just to tell you that, but how do I get you to move forward? Where do I take you that you're going down the best path for a happy life? That's my job. So a lot of times that's where, believe it or not, I recommend attorneys. I don't think New Jersey's caught up so much as far as having wonderful mediators like yourself. I would like to see that happen because people pay way too much for divorce attorneys, people. Ridiculous. So I do guide them on where they should go, if they should give it another try, and work with them. And sometimes I do have to bring law enforcement in, paper trails, and make sure that their safety is indeed one of the factors that I hold close to my heart, that they're okay.
How long have you been working as a psychic professionally?
Professionally, I started doing it. It's 14 years now. Where does time go?
Wow. And then you did tell me a while ago that even though you're not day-to-day a detective, that's not your primary work anymore, they do bring you in on cold cases, and you're able to bring in your psychic abilities to work on cold cases?
I really love working on cold cases and giving clarity. I just did a case not long ago. It was back from the 80s. And in the area, it was a very... very like family orientated area where people would have kind of a screen door in the backyard, and they really didn't, it was very cultural. They really didn't, you know, lock their doors up. And it, like I said, it was the 80s, and they had brought me the, and they had wondered if it was a domestic violence, how this woman was murdered. And I was able to go through it. I told them who the man was. I showed him what he looked like, and it was a robbery. And we were able to get some, you know, breakthrough on that for the family.
Dang, you must be in very, very high demand because these two skills and talents you have, law enforcement and your psychic abilities, what a great package to present to people.
Thank you.
Yeah, what a great package. And T, I really, really appreciated your candor and hopefully everybody listening has as well, because you're in it. You've been in it, you're day to day, you see the worst in people, and yet you're trying to work towards the best in people.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen. That's until I take my last breath.
So before we tell people how to get in touch with you, and we will, I just want to do our tips going forward, our learning lessons going forward. And here's what I wrote down. Absolutely get a prenup, even if you think you have nothing. Get a prenup for what you do have and get a prenup for what you might have going forward in a marriage. Number two. Don't accept abnormal behavior. Don't normalize abnormal behavior because it will escalate. Number three, be financially independent. Don't rely on anybody because when you go to get divorced, the person who's not financially independent will be a complete drain on the proceedings going forward. Very difficult to do any kind of settlement. And number four, don't be greedy. Compromise. Don't be greedy. Did I get it right?
Yeah, I think if we could get rid of that greed factor, people could be amicable and they could have a life with their children. You know, the kids suffer when the mother doesn't want to go to the wedding because the father's there with his new wife. And you know what? Does it matter, people? Get on with your own life. I don't really care what goes on with my exes, any of them. I really don't. Be happy. Everybody be happy.
Is there more than one, Tia?
Oh, sure, girl.
Tia, I know people are going to want to get in touch with you. How do they?
My office is in New Jersey, and I do Skype readings all over. I mean, even out of the country. So my number is 201-857-4990. And it's easy. Just go on my website. It's Tia Bell. I'm on social media, official Tia Bell on Instagram. I'm Tia Bell on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. And but calling my office and leaving a good old-fashioned message is probably the best way.
Okay, so I'm going to repeat your number slowly. It's 201-857-4990. 201-857-4990. And even though in the show notes, people will see how your name is written, but just to clarify, it's Tia, T as in Tom, I-A, Bell, B as in boy, E-L-L-E, correct?
Correct.
And that's .com for your website and
that's correct.
Instagram. Tia, thank you so much. This has been enlightening, delightful, because you are highly entertaining when you speak. And can we ask you to come back?
I would love to come back. And I'm very passionate about what your work is. And I think what you're doing for people, I hope they realize that you are a lifesaver for their finances. What they need is to go to a mediator, not to an attorney. And if they could just save the money and put it in the college fund for the kids, because $300,000 for an attorney to only just walk away after it's said and done is ridiculous. So well, thank you for your work.
Well, I appreciate that. And I definitely think mediation is the way to go when possible. But I always say, get attorney advice first before you enter the mediation so that you don't overreach and you don't ask for more than most of the law will allow. So, but thank you for all of that. And I want to thank you, Tia. And I want to thank everybody for listening today to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judith Weigel, your host. You can reach me, and amicable divorce expert, of course. You can reach me through my email, Judy at constructiveuncoupling.com, Judy@constructiveuncoupling.com, or you'll find me on the web. Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you next week.